up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we've got a busy hour coming up. Andy Baskin's going to join us from the fan in Cleveland. We're going to talk about the Browns. They are in the midst of kind of a mess of COVID. Very much similar to last year when they had that playoff game against the Steelers. Baskin is host of Baskin and Phelps on 92.3 The Fans. We're going to talk to him in just a couple of minutes. And then Jerry Palm is going to do his usual Thursday stop. We'll talk to him about a couple of the bowl matchups and also recruiting day yesterday. I get there's probably some of you out there that really enjoy the recruiting news and notes of early signing day, then, of course, regular signing day and where your school is and where your school ranks at Rivals, 24/7 Sports, ESPN.com, a variety of different recruiting websites. And then there are some of you that doesn't interest you at all because, in the end, the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, you just want to see if the recruiting class pans out, it pans out, and you'll see it on the field. And I get both sides of it. I will tell you, from my time living in different parts of the country, different parts of the country feel differently about recruiting than others. When I was in Colorado, it wasn't that big of a deal at all. Colorado wasn't in the national running for recruits. You know, if you have a good class, you have a pretty good class. Air Force and Colorado State are two Mountain West schools, so they're not in the big picture at all. But then I moved to Nashville in 2011. I've lived in Florida. It's where I met my wife. And in that part of the country, I lived in South Carolina. That part of the country, recruiting is a very, very big deal. Very big deal. It's not only watching what your school is doing, it's what your rival is doing. And it also what you, the schools within your conference are doing as well. If your rival happens to be, let's say, I don't know, Clemson, and they play in the ACC. So different parts of the country deal with recruiting differently. But nevertheless, it's extremely important. As we saw when we saw Dan Mullen get let go at Florida, one of the reasons, there were a number of them, but one of the reasons he did not enjoy recruiting and didn't mind saying that he didn't enjoy recruiting. And I think if you are the head coach at Florida in a place that really wants you to enjoy recruiting, you at least got to say you like it. But it was a big day for Texas A&M. They have been projected by a couple of sites to have the number one recruiting class. Alabama was number two. This is early signing. It'll all get worked out even more in February. But as we talked about in hour number one, Deion Sanders with that big splash for Jackson State, landing the number one overall recruit or the second overall recruit, depending on how you look at it, in Travis Hunter. But coming up, how is Cleveland going to react this weekend? We'll get to that next.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It's 1972 on this Throwback Thursday. The Dolphins go 14-0 on this date, finishing their regular season undefeated. They would go on to win the Super Bowl, beating Washington in Super Bowl VII. They also beat the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. And the Steelers got there on the Immaculate Reception. A lot of people misinterpret the Immaculate Reception. They think the Steelers, because they won all the Super Bowls, they won Super Bowls in the 70s, that helped them. That did not. That Immaculate Reception just helped them advance over the Raiders in the playoffs, where they lost to the Dolphins on this run of a perfect season. And you probably know, if you're an NFL fan, obviously, that every time a team that is unbeaten loses, they say the Dolphins celebrate, etc. Those who are still left celebrate because they want to remain the only unbeaten team that won a Super Bowl. Right, the Patriots may have matched them during the regular season, but of course they had their, had it derailed by the Giants. The Cleveland Browns at 7-6 will take on the Raiders on Saturday, one of two Saturday games for the league this weekend, and they are getting just drilled with COVID-19. Now, if you go back to January, this happened to them when they played the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kevin Stefanski wasn't on the sidelines. They had to, they beat the Steelers anyway. It really wasn't a problem. Alex Van Pelt will call plays. Mike Prefer will serve as an interim coach. It could be Case Keenum at quarterback. They've got a lot of players on that team. This has been an up and down season for Cleveland in terms of you feel like sometimes they play pretty well, then they don't. Then they, it's what a 7-6 record kind of indicates. indicates that, you know, you've had games and you've lost games and you've gone back and forth to be just a little bit above 500. Disappointing? I guess. I mean, this has been a wild year for the AFC, where we've seen sort of every team kind of go. There isn't a dominating team in this conference right now. So I don't think it's fair to assume somebody should have taken the mantle of that. I mean, the Patriots right now are the top seed, but, you know, they've got a rookie quarterback that could cause them an issue. So there's no dominating team. But as far as the Browns go at 7-6, we'll see how this COVID situation goes. Andy Baskin joins us from The Fan in Cleveland. Give us a little bit more details on that. How are you, Andy?
Good. How are you doing today?
How similar is this to what they were going through with the Steelers in the playoff game in terms of the coaching staff?
That's a good analogy. With Kevin Stefanski being out, Mike Prefer is the head coach, and Alex Van Pelt was calling the plays in that game, and we all saw what happened. Now, they did catch a lucky break in the beginning of that game with a snap that, you know, ended up in the end zone. So that was one thing, and it propelled them in the right direction. But, you know, there have been times this year that people think Kevin Stefanski is way too conservative on offense, and no matter how broken Baker Mayfield is, they're not really throwing the ball down the field. And there's kind of been an outcry for the last couple of weeks to see Alex Van Pelt call the plays. Now, this is not the scenario I think anybody wanted to see that happen in. And I think that they've kind of scaled back a little bit. You hear rumblings that Alex Van Pelt's, that his voice might be a little bit louder, or that Kevin is maybe rethinking the way he's calling plays, at least last week against the Ravens. But it's a weird situation because there are fans that wanted Van Pelt to start calling the plays. And, you know, now you have it. Let's see what happens, especially with a different scenario and no Baker Mayfield.
For a lot of people, they hear COVID reserve list. They don't necessarily know exactly what it means. Could some of these guys that are on it now, could they be available on Saturday, or is it a little too late in the game?
No, there is a chance. I mean, if some of these guys come through negative today and negative tomorrow, if they come through negative today and negative tomorrow, they would be able to play on Saturday. But the problem is the game is on Saturday. So, excuse me, that cut 24 hours off of the timeline that you would have on a normal game. So it kind of put them in a weird spot.
Case Keenum, if he does play, how much action has he seen this season?
Well, he did beat the Broncos earlier in the season on Thursday night. There's a lot of faith and trust in him, but ever since I've been a kid, the backup quarterback in Cleveland has always seemed to be the favorite, except for when Bernie and Brian Kipe were the quarterbacks here. So
7-6, here's what you are as a record. It has been an up-and-down season for Cleveland. Is this, as I was mentioning earlier, there just hasn't been an AFC dominating team, so I think it would be unfair to say somebody should have had that. If no one's got it, why not? But how disappointing is this given what they did last year, or is this about where they should be given some ups and downs of a season?
I mean, the hype of the offseason, people were talking Super Bowl around here. They wanted it. But if you go back and you look at it from outer space and you say, wow, the Browns made the playoffs last year for the first time, for the second time since 1999, and they actually won a game in the playoffs for the first time since 99. When they returned, if I told you you got a chance to make the playoffs, if you won out with four games to go or won three of your last four games and you're going to make the playoffs, would you take it? And I think if you look from a million miles away, you would have said yes, especially after the heels of 1-15 and 0-16 seasons that weren't that long ago. So I think the big picture reality is the franchise is still moving in the right direction. They've caught some crazy breaks this year. Baker's been hurt. The OBJ situation was bizarre beyond belief. So, realistically, I think when it's all said and done at the end of the season, I think Browns fans will be like, man, we wanted so much more, but it really wasn't that bad. It could have been a lot worse.
We talk about the quarterback situation with COVID. What worries you about who's on that list and may not play Saturday as well?
Well, it's offensive linemen. I mean, you're talking about two offensive linemen that might not be able to play out of five. That's bad news. Obviously, Baker not being able to play, that's bad news. Jarvis Landry. The defense is in a little bit better shape. I think the bigger thing about the COVID list is that we're scared that we're going to hear more names today. So we've got our fingers crossed that we don't hear any more names today and we don't hear any more names tomorrow. Because I do think the Browns fans are still like, you know what? The Raiders are kind of a dumpster fire. They've got a chance in this game. If they sit where they are right now at 13, there's also a chance that David Njoku could be back. He was on the COVID list last week. So that number from 14 could go down, but I think we all have our fingers crossed that it doesn't go up.
What about the running game? Is that going to be more in play with Keenum or not?
Well, I would think so, especially because D'Ernest Johnson has been kind of this quiet thunder that's been behind Kareem Hunt and been behind Nick Chubb. They've had three really good running backs this year, but if Nick's available and the Browns can run the ball, you give that ball to Nick Chubb and let him run. It's all they need to do.
How are the Browns playing right now? I mean, again, we talked about the season as in a large picture, but right now we're getting to the nitty-gritty of what you're doing today. How are they playing today?
Again, you take the COVID guys out. I don't know what this is going to look like, but I do think that when you look at the way things have changed, the defense had a bad game against the Patriots, but they've been able to play really well since then. And so that's been a big feather in their cap. You know, they haven't given up a lot of points and over since the Patriots game. So they've been playing better. The offense has really, really struggled. You know, I say this all the time. The way the game's set up right now, the way things are coordinated for the quarterback and the wide receivers, the NFL basically hands you 20 points, 21 points when you walk on the field. And the Browns offense hasn't been able to do that. Now, is that because of Baker Mayfield's injuries? I think we'll find out when he's healthy again.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to next. How has he been dealing with those injuries? I mean, look, COVID's COVID, and it can affect you in different ways. Is there an opportunity to rest up a little bit more if Case Keenum does play Saturday?
Well, that's actually a silver lining if you want to look at it that way, because it sounds like Baker Mayfield has no symptoms right now. So if he gets the opportunity to rest and maybe rest his shoulder a little bit, I'll tell you this, after the bye week, he looked pretty darn good last week in the first half against the Ravens. Now, maybe he got hit a little bit and things change. You know, you get an interception here. The coach loses confidence in you. You stop throwing the ball downfield. That all can be, you know, can be image and what you're wondering what Baker Mayfield's doing. So I think there are a lot of factors that play into this. Some people will say, well, you're making excuses for Baker Mayfield. I'm not. The guy's playing with a non-throwing shoulder with rubber bands and scotch tape. I mean, he's out there and he's trying the best that he can. You know, I think he kind of picked on Kevin Stefanski a little bit last week, talking about the offense and wishing that they'd open it up a little bit more in the second half, because they did score all their points against the Ravens in the first and didn't score in the second. So there are things to be fixed, but, you know, still the core of this thing is in pretty good shape.
How are the practices run this week with all of this COVID, people leaving and virtual meetings and whatnot? How are the practices?
So, you know, it's a condensed week already because you're playing on Saturday.
Right.
So that didn't help anything. They've been doing virtual calls. They had a walkthrough yesterday. That's it. They were hoping to have a full practice today. We'll see what happens. It's very much like, you know, running a Friday practice or a Saturday practice for Sunday games is the way it sounds, the way that Kevin Stefanski described it yesterday.
Andy, great stuff. I really appreciate you always coming on when we need you and right before you get on in Cleveland. Really appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
No worries, and hopefully no one will call me next time I'm talking to you.
<That's right>. Andy Baskin of The Fan in Cleveland joining us as the Browns get ready. Again, he said there'll be to practice this week. Up to like 10 starters are on this COVID list. I'll be honest with you guys. I'll be honest with you. I know probably many of you are like this. Sometimes the COVID list for me gets so overwhelming, and the regulations and what you can and can't do, I get lost in what teams are looking like, right? Like how they're looking the week. I get players not playing, right? That I can understand. But I'm trying to figure out how do you prepare in a league where nothing is given, nothing, nothing is given. Houston can beat you like we saw Tennessee. Jacksonville can beat you like we saw with Buffalo. Nothing, and certainly a team like Las Vegas that has had some problems and play, but still can go out there and not that long ago beat Dallas and Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. And they're putting together maybe their first real practice today leading to a Saturday game. Again, this is what COVID is doing to these teams. And for the Browns, I mean, you've got a lot of players, 15 are on the COVID-19 list. That was just yesterday morning. And as Ron and I have been saying this morning, who knows what that's going to be. In all likelihood, Case Keenum will start. Kevin Stefanski will not be on the sideline. So Mike Prefer is going to serve as an interim coach. Alex Van Pelt is going to call the plays. There's a lot of very interesting development in Cleveland, who's 7-6, one of those teams that is, again, in the middle of that run. Like, there's a lot of 7-6 teams in the NFL right now, a lot of them. And again, nobody's dominating the league, so these games are extremely important as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, and Jerry Palm's going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes, and we'll get his thoughts on college football as we continue with Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Well, now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
1972 on a throwback Thursday, the 72 Dolphins going 14-0 on this date. Need gift ideas? The Holiday Gift Guide is something for everyone on your list. Its price is under $15, like a pair of Mechanics Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque two-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the Holiday Gift Guide for great ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store or O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Every time I hear this song, I think of Reservoir Dogs, and that's too bad because it's a good song, but I can't help think Michael Madsen dancing around with a knife, chopping off somebody's ear.
Yeah.
So I can't help it. It's one of the...
But, you know,
there are songs that do that, right? They're they're so connected to a moment in a movie that you can't listen to the song without remembering the movie moment.
I'm picturing the dance right now. Good moves, yep. though. Good yep. dance moves.
That's right.
I mean, that's... That's the way I think you and I would dance at a wedding if this song was playing.
I think so. That's right.
Man, you know, not too much like action, that. Not too much flamboyant stuff going on. Just, you know, just grooving to the rhythm.
There are a ton of them like that. The funny thing is I can't think of a bunch off the top of my head, but I just know them when I hear them.
Yeah.
Where I'm on the, like, I'll be on the, we got a station here in Nashville that plays like 70s and 80s music, 60s, 70s, 80s. It's called Hippie Radio, and it's one of my favorite stations because this music is more relatable to me at my age. And there's songs where I go, oh, that's from this song. That's from this movie. That's from that movie. This, you know, you can't help it. And that's certainly one of them. So, nevertheless, thanks to Andy Baskin. Andy Baskin's, again, another one of our guys we like because he comes on right before he goes on in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And so he always makes time for us. Yeah, we go, yeah, it's good.
He comes on right now, like in another 10 minutes, he has his pre-morning meeting.
Yeah.
And that's why he comes on at that time. And then,
do you think we help him get his thoughts in order?
I think what it is, I don't know if we help him get his thoughts in order.
Like, he has all of them together, but yeah. do we prime it the way he presented it to us, he'll present it on the air?
I think it's more of, you know, kind of getting him hyped up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's in the locker room. He's sitting at the bench. He's ready to go, but there's a little bit of nerves about going. And then you talk to him, and then he's pumped. He's ready to go.
Sure.
He's like, going to explode on the radio in Cleveland today.
Like, if I were to do a monologue on, like, Deion Sanders or Urban Meyer getting fired, right?
Yeah.
And then after, like, the show was over, a buddy who does local radio somewhere is like, oh, you know what? I'm going to see if Tony will come on and talk Urban Meyer. I would probably repeat the exact same points I made in my monologue, right?
No,
probably in the
would,
same way. And I wondered, do we do that for him where he says things to us in a certain tone, in a certain way, that he just goes, you know what, when I'm on the air, I'm going to exactly say it like I just said.
Well, I mean, because you asked
like
him.
Like a dress rehearsal. With
yeah,
him.
You're asking him questions that he knows the answers to.
Right.
He just, maybe he didn't have them written down, and now he's going to go write them down. Like, oh, you know what? Tony brought up a great question. We're going to talk about this today.
Yeah, right. So I'm hoping maybe.
And I do have a feeling that he, you know, one thing he is absolutely 100% right about is that all of Cleveland is holding their breath today.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
No more, please.
So again, 1972, the Miami Dolphins. And I was just saying this before we had Andy on. This is a team that everybody knows if you follow the NFL, because every time there's a 7-0, 8-0, 10-0, 11-0, 13-0 team that loses, everyone goes, the 72 Miami Dolphins are celebrating, and those who are still around are still popping champagne, et cetera, right? Because that's what they do, and that's what they were kind of known for. This is like you know, when the other night at the Garden, Ray Allen was there to be like, Steph, it's yours. The three-point record belongs to you. The Dolphins want no part of that nonsense at all. Those guys are not going to be, oh, whoever, congratulations. You went 19-0 and Super Bowl champs, and you even beat us because we only went 17-0 as Super Bowl champs. No, they want none of that.
No.
They want to own this forever. They want to own this forever. So there you go.
And honestly, I don't... I mean, right now, I don't see it happening anytime soon.
I don't either.
Yeah, it's because, I mean, it is hard. It's a grind.
I think the Patriots, when they went 16-0, they said it best. That was the hardest thing they've ever done.
Yeah, and that was probably one of the best teams we've ever had.
Yep.
Just the fact that they could not get past the Giants, a lowly Giants wild card team.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Goodness gracious. So, you know, the funny thing about the that 72 Dolphins team, again, being unbeaten, is it took the Patriots in 2007 to get to 14. Like, no one finished the regular season undefeated. Like the Patriots were derailed at the Super Bowl, but that's a long time to have nobody else go unbeaten. That shows you how really, really hard it is to do. Like, some really good football teams, like those Niner teams or Giants teams or the Bears who went 15-1. None of them, no. Only the Patriots in 2007 went 16-0.
And that's like the best thing about it.
Did anybody go 14-0 and then lost? I don't remember a 14-0 team because I
don't think so.
I would have remembered that. I would have remembered saying they tied the Dolphins but then lost week 15 or something. Like, the Bears lost, like, so I think it was early December when they lost, but I don't think they had gotten to 14 straight wins before the Dolphins beat them in 85. So, yeah, it's not easy to do. Like, I remember one year, the 90, I think it was 90, the Giants and the Niners both went into December unbeaten. And I think they both lost in the same week. Giants went on to win the Super Bowl that year. And that's when Phil Simms got hurt and Jeff Hostetler took over. But I don't think anybody's gone 14-0, so... Nevertheless, there's one thing we do know, and that the music of 1972 is pretty awesome.
It's been pretty good so far.
Pretty good so far. So,
nah, it's funny. I mean, you know, I love the fact that the team that probably could have gone undefeated because it was a little bit shorter of a season, I mean, or shorter playoff, was the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears.
They easily could have done it, except it was the Dolphins that derailed them.
The Dolphins derailed them on a night. Now, here's the thing about that. If you watch the 30 for 30 on the Bears, they talked about they were kind of filled with some hubris and they were getting caught up in the attention. They were really good, like good, like where you dominate and you dominate in a way that makes you think there really isn't anybody on our level. Right.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, yeah, there
like,
wasn't.
You know what I mean? Like, where you know that, like, you can be humble and be like, anybody can beat us, but you kind of know nobody really can beat you. Like, there's that feeling like you have. And these guys said, even Dan Marino, they just felt like, nah, in the end, we're going to win. And they got caught off guard, and the Dolphins kind of had figured out some things that they could exploit and did. Got caught off guard, got behind, couldn't rally, and lost that game. And it kind of was a wake-up call, and they just dominated the rest of the way and won the Super Bowl. But they all talk about, well, we weren't really beaten like we beat ourselves. Like, we were all caught up in who we were and what we were doing. We kind of forgot that every now and then a team, especially when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback like Dan Marino on the other side, who's just a couple of years into his career, he could beat us. Like, they just didn't feel like that could happen, and they kind of didn't take that game as seriously. I think a lot of players say that, like, after the fact, where they go, yeah, we beat ourselves, when maybe it was a little bit of both. Like, maybe the Dolphins were pretty good and gave you a good show, and maybe also on the flip side, you may have let your guard down a little bit, believing in your own hype. There's probably a combination of both. But thanks to the New England Patriots, we never got the Super Bowl rematch because those pesky Patriots and Craig James at the running back position and Tony Eason at quarterback decided to derail that party by beating the Dolphins in the AFC Championship game.
Are there names in the Ring of Honor?
Those names in the Ring of Honor.
They need to be, right?
It was Russ Francis and Tony Eason and Craig James. I'm trying to remember a few others. I don't know if Stanley Morgan was still on that team. I think he might have been gone by then. I'm trying to remember. John Hanna might have been still on that team. I don't know. But I remember, because I was growing up in New England, that was the Squish the Fish game. And then this was the best. The next one was Bury the Bears. And Raymond Berry was the head coach of the Patriots. So Berry was spelled B-E-R-R-Y. And it showed the New England Minuteman on top of a bear rug as they got ready for Super Bowl 20. I actually had that T-shirt as a kid. I had that T-shirt.
The Squish the Fish.
Yeah, the Squish the Fish and the Bury the Bears. I wasn't a Patriots fan, but I don't care. I kind of got caught up in the hype that year. I actually had that shirt, and that game was over so fast. It was ridiculous. Like, you're watching that Super Bowl going, oh, this is not going to go the Patriots' way at all. I love the way the Bears described that Super Bowl. The defensive players, Buddy Ryan came in to tell them he was going to leave to go coach the Philadelphia Eagles. And he's told all those guys, he goes, I love all of you. And he goes, I love you all so much. Dan Hampton picked up a chair, threw it against the wall. They were like, we ain't losing this game. We are. And they put him on his shoulders. They put Buddy Ryan on their shoulders walking off that field with Mike Ditka. They loved that guy so much. They were like, we're going to go through a brick wall and then some for you. Those Patriots are dead. That's what they did. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Jerry Palm joins us, CBS Sports, talk some college football as we get ready into the bowl season that gets started tomorrow. Bahamas Bowl kicking everything off. Toledo against MTSU. How are you, Jerry?
All right, how are you?
Good. I want to ask you about Deion Sanders pulling this sort of great recruiting move, getting Travis Hunter to Jackson State. A lot of people are making this a large issue about name, image, and likeness and a new look at college football. How did you see Deion being able to pull a kid from Florida State to Jackson State?
Well, I'm sure that that's part of it. You know, there's no question that that's part of how, you know, they were able to get him at Jackson State. But I think, you know, part of it is they're a lure to Deion Sanders. You know, and I mean, just, you know, if you're a defensive back, especially getting to play for Deion Sanders. And I remember the young man talking about, you know, trying to elevate the stature of playing at HBCUs. And we had a player at, do that in basketball. Now, it didn't work out for him because he got hurt, but that was just a couple of years ago. So I think there's just multiple factors involved. But NIL is certainly one of those factors, but it's not like Florida State can't compete, you know, in that marketplace.
With the resources now, maybe resources is not the right word. The things that players now have to their advantage, being able to transfer without losing a year and sort of looking at the landscape a little differently. How quick do coaches are going to have to adapt to what players can do now and have the power to do now?
Oh, they absolutely have to adapt, and they've already started adapting. They have to. You know, the thing about college coaching is there's a lot of rules that you just don't control, right. And it's a completely different thing than the NFL, which is totally, you know, I shouldn't say totally, you know, free marketplace because players have contracts, but, you know, it's just a completely different atmosphere and conditions under which you operate your team. So it's, there's always things that you have to adapt to as a college coach. And this is obviously a big one that you have to adapt to, but, you know, adapt they will.
Look, I'm not going to cry for Nick Saban's future recruiting talent. I'm sure he's going to do fine, but I wonder from a standpoint of a kid going, look, a few years ago, I would have been fine going to Alabama and not playing for 2 years and winning a national title, maybe even a title I didn't even participate in. But now I don't have to do that. I can go someplace, be a starting quarterback right away, get paid, get some exposure, move on if I don't like it there. Like, there's so many different things to do now than being lured into a, hey, we'll get you to the NFL, just stay behind these three NFLers.
Yeah, well, you know, it's nice for the players to have options.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and no need to cry for Nick Saban. His recruiting class is just fine.
You know? I totally agree. I don't think it'll be.
You know, Alabama is still Alabama, and Alabama can provide some of those financial incentives, even if it's not.
Sure, they can.
Even if it's not, you're going to get on the field as quick at Alabama. But you never know because guys get hurt, and then you get the next thing you know, you're on the field. And, you know, that's why it's like, well, you know, Alabama had some guy get hurt, he's going to miss a year. And it's like, well, yeah, there's some other five-star guy just waiting to get on the field that we just don't know about yet because he hasn't played, but he's probably just as good.
Yeah, I mean, look at just what happened this past week. Slovis is leaving USC, Radler leaving Oklahoma.
Oh, God, quarterbacks.
I mean, it's wide
open.
There are
quarterbacks all over the transfer market. I mean, yeah. Big-name quarterbacks. Spencer Rattler found a home at South Carolina, I believe.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, highly touted, relatively talented, maybe not as successful yet quarterbacks out on that market right now that are looking for a home, and it might be too many.
So as we get closer and closer to New Year's games with the semifinals in action, is there any developments that have occurred to sort of shifted the way you see Alabama, Cincinnati, Georgia, Michigan?
No, nothing. I don't think it's happened this week. In fact, a lot of teams, you know, this is finals week, so you're not even really getting as much practice in or just light practices going on this week. I haven't seen any injury reports or anything like that. So this is a relatively quiet week for the teams that are, unless your bowl game is this week, this is a pretty quiet week for you.
I wanted to ask you this, and it's going to tie into the story that we have this morning about Urban Meyer. From a college perspective, Urban Meyer had an embarrassing run in Jacksonville, but will there be a landing spot for him coming up in college athletics again, or does he need to sort of disappear for a bit?
Well,
like I was thinking about Rick Pitino at Iona, right? Like he had to leave a little bit, comes back, does some good things at Iona. Can Urban Meyer do the same thing?
Both of those things could be true, disappear for a little bit and still find a landing spot in college football. If he decides he wants to coach again, surely somebody will hire him to coach again. He's been far too successful at college football to not find a place to coach. You know, I personally don't think my school would ever hire him, but yeah. there are certainly going to be places that would hire Urban Meyer to, and I don't think he's going to have to go to FCS, you know, like Rick Pitino to Iona, which is something similar. I don't think he's going to have to do that to rebuild an image or anything like that. He's just probably going to have to sit out a while, but he probably would anyway. I mean, you know, he never went from job to job. He went from job to out for a while to job to out for a while, even when he was leaving on his own. So we're probably not going to see Urban Meyer for a few years coaching anybody, and then we'll see if we ever see him coach again. He might just go back to the TV booth if he can find someone to hire him there.
Well, I was mentioning earlier the college football bowl season starts on Friday. There's two games on the slate. There's a couple bunch this weekend. Just give us an idea, like, what does it mean for a school to go to a bowl game? We talk about these 6-6 schools, but there's a lot of reason why you'd want to go to one of these things.
Yeah, it's not usually a great financial windfall for you unless you're in one of the bigger games, because you end up spending a lot of money, you know, of the that you're getting from the bowl to actually participate in the bowl. But what you do have is an extra, you know, week and a half or so, maybe more, of practice that you can get in. And you get to, you know, work with some of the younger guys and work towards next year, even with your bowl practices. So that's a big advantage. Coaches always consider being able to have practice is a huge advantage and or a very positive thing for their team. And so, you know, making a bowl game means another week or two of practice that you might not get otherwise. And so it's like getting the jump on spring practice with your team. So, that, yeah, they love that.
I was going to ask you about Dabo Swinney's comments. So he doesn't like the way college football is. And some coaches, like Mike Leach, he doesn't like players opting out. I love them that they're truthful. I mean, be honest to yourself. But does that hurt them down the road when a kid is like, well, I'm going to go get my money, coach. I don't know if you like it or not, but if I'm going to play for you, I'm getting the deals.
I do not begrudge players for opting out of bowl games.
I don't either.
To protect themselves against injury for the NFL, because as much as I love bowl games, and I do love bowl games, and I'll watch a lot of them or at least part of them, but they're glorified exhibitions. Right? There's no, unless you're part of the playoff, you know, there's nothing, these are really exhibition games. They're Chamber of Commerce events. They're fun. I'm not saying we shouldn't have them, but if somebody wants to protect himself from injury because he knows he has an NFL career ahead of him, I'm not begrudging that guy for opting out at all. That's just kind of the nature of the beast. I mean, look, the schools are not always watching out for the players. And the good coaches, the really good coaches, the guys who care about their players, are going to take that opinion too, because they understand these guys got lives ahead of them and they've got some possible big money ahead of them, and why shouldn't they protect themselves?
And is that sort of like, look, again, I like the fact that these guys are at least honest, don't lie, be honest about it, but is that sort of a dinosaur mentality now? Like, go to a recruit's house and tell them what benefits is going to be at your school, rather than saying, I really am not going to like the things that you're going to be able to do.
Yeah, that's obviously not going to help.
that's not
a very good sales pitch.
Right.
You know, that's not a very good sales pitch. And, you know, I think if the, you know, Clemson's not been in this position in quite some time.
Right.
You know, where they're playing a bowl game that's not part of the playoff. When was the last time Clemson did that?
Yeah, and listen, it wasn't that long ago when they won the national title that players were on national TV telling players to come to Clemson because they were having a blast.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, you know, I don't think telling players that they can't opt out of a bowl game is you know, I mean, coaches, obviously you want all your best players there, right? But,
right.
You know, you also, if you, I mean, if you're a coach, I mean, I coached a lot. I mean, I never coached at any level where I got paid for it, but I coached a lot. And you always want what's best for your kids, right? You know,
right.
So it's, you have to want what's best for your kids. And that's clearly what's best for those kids. So you should encourage that.
Well, you know, if I'm Mike Leach, I'd probably want the best team I could put against my former Texas Tech team, right? I mean, at the Liberty Bowl,
sure.
I want to be, you know, have the best team
I
can.
Yeah, sure. But, so you go out and compete with what you have. And that's the way it is, you know. But every school is losing somebody, you know, whether it's the grades or to the NFL or, you know, your bowl roster is hardly ever, for anybody, your entire roster that you started with. Because there's just chances for some attrition at the semester break. But it's, that's the way it goes. You just have to go with what you have, but you have to want what's best for your players individually and collectively.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, on with us. Again, have a great holiday, my friend. Have a Merry Christmas to you for next week. I appreciate your time, my man, as always.
All right, thanks. Anytime. You too.
You got it. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, joining us. Good points there on the larger picture of college athletics. Again, the bowl season, I don't know how much of you guys are get into, like, you know, the Boca Raton Bowl or the New Mexico Bowl. To me, I'll tell you flat out, these are bowls, the early ones, right? As we get more and more into really bigger bowls, like the New Year's Day Bowls, the playoffs, some of the really good matchups against some really good teams, these bowls are usually bowls I'll just kind of have on in my house. I may be doing some things, holidays, friend, you know, family are over, whatnot, and that the Utah-Oregon State game is just on our TV or whatever it might be. Now, there's some NFL games coming up on Saturday, but you've got bowl games on Saturday that run from early afternoon all the way into the evening. I mean, Louisiana and Marshall is the night game, and it starts at, you know, after 8 o'clock my time, the New Orleans Bowl. So there's a lot. I mean, there's like six bowls on Saturday and two tomorrow. That's one starts in the afternoon, the Bahamas Bowl. And then you're pretty much getting one every single day. All right, it's Tony D, Ron Culver. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue with Wake Up Call.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Celebrating the Dolphins of that year, winning their 14th game and concluding the regular season. Michael on Twitter, because he's like our encyclopedia, the Bears went 12-0 when they met the Dolphins on Monday night back in 1985. All right, so that, I think, is the furthest anybody's ever gone undefeated in the NFL. I'm trying to think if there's besides the Patriots.
Besides
take them
the
off
Patriots.
The table. Forget them. Take them off the table.
The Panthers?
Panthers, maybe.
When they went 15-1?
Yeah, I might have to look into that. You know, the Steelers went 11-0 last year. So they were three away from getting to 14-0.
In 2015.
If it wasn't for COVID, they would have. They lost to Washington.
Yeah.
A messy
game. 2015, the Panthers started the season 14-0.
Oh, did they? So they matched the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. All right. That has to be the deepest.
Then went 15-1 after that, besides the Patriots.
Not it. Dog in the background, excited that somebody in the neighborhood is just out delivering. She's had a great run of barking at every package delivery guy and gal that has come in our cul-de-sac. It's fantastic. It's beyond words how excited I am to have her just all day constantly barking at every delivery. Like, she thinks, you know,
the truth is, Tony, you're lucky.
I am.
I mean,
I
you
really
have
am.
A
like,
dog that just barks all day long.
All the time.
When Amazon is coming to your door.
I will never forget one year. We've had her since 2012. I'll never forget one year, middle of the night. She sleeps in our bed. She gets up out of the bed. It's like 2 in the morning. Loses her mind. Goes bananas. Runs to the door. Starts barking to the screaming. I mean, just, you know, something's out there. I look outside. I can't see anybody. And I go, what's that? I turn on the light. And there was two people walking up and down our street at 2 o'clock in the morning, just doing nothing. Just walking up and down our street. And I don't know what they were there for.
Neighborhood watch or case in the joint.
I don't know why they were there. I don't know why they were looking. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it could have been completely innocent. Maybe they were broken down and were hoping that somebody, they never came to my door when they saw the lights on. But she noticed them. She felt their presence down our little hill and went completely bananas. I mean, she was loud, too, like really loud. So, Michael, again, I think one of the Peyton Manning Colts went 13-0 one season. I think you're right. I have a feeling that's true. I don't know if that's true off the top of my head, but I got a feeling that that's true as well. So, only the Dolphins wrapped up a season 14-0 before the Patriots did it in 2007.
But only they
completed it. Of course,
that should have
been discounted because of Spygate.
Yeah, only
thrown
they
thrown out the window.
Only the Dolphins completed it.
That's right. Complete.
That's
yes.
That's where we, you know, they have
they
the
finished,
perfect season.
They got it
season.
Done. 17-0 is better than 18-1. We agreed with that, right?
Yep.
When the Giants beat the Patriots, we said, unfortunately, 17-0 Super Bowl champions are better than 18 wins, but the loss in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, the so truth is, I mean, you know, you lose the Super Bowl, whole season's a waste.
What if you went 18? Yeah. What if you went 18-1
this year?
You no. Listen to this. You went 18-1. You well it, back then. This year would be 16-1 plus three games, so 19-1. So what if you went 19-1, but you went 16-1 during the season with your last loss coming in the final game, but you won the Super Bowl? Are those 19 wins and a loss better than 17 wins in a Super Bowl? And you won the Super Bowl too. Good question. I got
good
you stumped.
Good question. You do.
I got you stumped.
I'm also confused.
No blemishes, Super Bowl champions, more wins and Super Bowl champions. Think about that one. Stew on that one as we go to the next hour on Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.